All right, folks, we are back on the T-Top Podcast, brought to you by Flagstick.com. Back in the studio, I'm back in the country. And Scotty's in the studio for the first time in probably a month. How are you doing?
Yeah, it's been a while. Looking forward to it. Yeah, I was out of the country, too,
the
week before. So it's been a while since we've hit here, and certainly a lot going on in golf. So lots to talk about. Let's see if we can get through it all.
Yeah, it's been a few weeks since the PGA show. We will get into the PGA show and some equipment news. And I was at the Waste Management Open in the Arizona.
I think I'm more interested in that than probably the PGA show after having been to a lot of PGA shows over the years. But certainly I think we've got a lot of topics that are related to the Phoenix Open this week. That's
well,
for sure.
I have breaking news.
All right.
I got a hot tip on the floor, or the floor, I guess the grass of the Waste Management Open that I haven't told you about.
All right.
There is a player making a massive comeback, and it's a comeback that people have been talking about for years wanting to see. Word is that been practicing, been playing well, and he's going to make a comeback. He finally turned 50, so he will be out on the Champions Tour for some qualifiers this year. Our co-host, Scott McLeod, turned 50 last week.
Oh, nice try.
And everyone at the Waste Management Open, that's all they could talk about, was you going out to the Champions Tour this year.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening, though. I have been sucked into a friend of mine talking to me about going down to the qualifier for the U.S. Senior Open this year.
I will be on the bag, whether you like
so
it or not.
So I might be interested in that, and we'll see. Yeah, I get to move up a T-deck in our PGA of Canada events.
Nice.
And, I'll probably play something.
Well, happy birthday. Episode
Thank
51.
You.
Layer 50. Should have lined it up.
Well, you know what? Episode 50 actually came out on my 50th birthday while you're away. So.
But you probably didn't say happy birthday to yourself.
No, I didn't. And my daughter certainly ignored it as well when I brought her on for a little segment there.
There you go. Well, let's talk about the Waste Management Open in Arizona. Had a great time. Played a lot of golf. But this Waste Management Open, Scotty, I don't think TV does it justice. This place is chaos.
Well, you know what? It's an event I have not been to. And, you know, I was thinking about it last week. I was talking to a number of people and we were talking about regular tour events that have a personality. And they're few and far between when you start to think about it now. So, you know, I really want to hear from you as someone who's never been down to the event. Obviously, talked to a lot of people that have been there, players, spectators, whatever, because obviously there's a 500,000 plus people there every week. But, you know, from the ground floor for you, who's, you know, caddied out on tour, been to many events, what are your thoughts? I mean, what's your feel for the event?
I enjoyed it as something that's different. As a caddy, it would be a nightmare out there. And we're actually going to bring Kyle Peters on the podcast this week to talk about it. It's never quiet. It doesn't matter what hole you're on.
True.
Thursday, there was a group of 20 guys dressed as Augusta National caddies following around. All they were doing was cheering for the caddies the whole time, which was funny, but also chaotic. There's people yelling all the time, from obscenities to, you know, good things. It's chaotic, but it's every hole. It's not just 16, and you can hear 16 from a mile away. I heard the roars from when Rory, you know, made that final putt of the Canadian Open. You hear 16 from, you know, the furthest point away from 16 might be like the third hole there. And it sounds like you're right there. And that was Thursday. It's crazy. I actually really appreciate it. I think I know at the Canadian Open, they're trying to build that rink hole. I think they could build that atmosphere a little bit more Canadian-like atmosphere probably. But I like it. It's something different. The golf course itself, without the chaos, it's nothing special. It's not that... It's pretty straightforward. What you see is what you get. I mean, when minus 17 or whatever gets you into a playoff, then you kind of get that. But perfect condition. Green. So green. I played TPC Scottsdale, the Champions Course, earlier in the week. Not as green.
No, but it's a solid golf course.
Great golf course. If you can get past the airplanes flying over your head every two seconds.
You do have to get used to that. That is a pretty busy airport.
And it was the day we were there Sunday when we were playing. So it was just private jet overhead. I mean, weird segue. Well, we'll get back to the Waste Management Open. None of us have cell phone service when we're down there. So when we were making the turn, that's when we all found out that Kobe Bryant had passed. So when there's a great bar there with all the TVs, and walked up and it was all over the TVs. And I looked at the bartender and said, "Is that real?" And she was like, I don't know. I don't. And then the guy turned that was at the bar. He's like, is it real? I was like, I just got here. You got to tell me.
Yeah.
We were kind of shocked. But yeah, that's a weird place to find out.
I wouldn't have expected, even if you had cell phone service, that you could have really, there'd be a lot of interference with that many people around there. So I don't know how well that would work anyways. And obviously as loud as it is,
yeah,
you know, but and whatever the case may be, I too was on the golf course when I heard, we were heading up on Southern Dunes, in Florida there. And we got to the one tee box, and these guys are in a tee box in front of us and said, hey, have you heard? And I'm like, have heard what? Have you heard about Kobe? I'm like, well, obviously, you know, your mind right away mm-hmm. is obviously something has probably happened. And then obviously they explained what had happened. So, you know, somber all around as far as that. But obviously the Waste Management Open, a lot of players honored his memory. The PGA Tour did as well on Sunday with the pin.
Perfect.
On 16, going 24 yards back and 8 yards in. And, you know, so that was great to see as well.
It was. But, yeah, the tournament, you know, chaotic, as said, loud, awesome, though. There's so many great places. 16 is great, but there's, they call it the Ridge. You can see 12, 13, 14, 6, 7. Like, you can see so many, and there's, yeah. you know, there's bars up
that,
there.
That
it's
is
great.
The advantage of the TPC golf courses. I mean, as much as a lot of people will knock them because some of the designs are maybe not all that exciting, save for, you know, TPC Sawgrass, they are built for golf tournaments. They mm-hmm. really, really are. And I mean, from a viewing perspective and for a fan perspective, certainly you can see. And then if you're crushing in that many people in there, that obviously makes it better that way. So yeah. So for you, I mean, what were the key takeaways from, you know, we'll use the Canadian Open as a comparison because it was a very successful event last year and obviously had a concert on the Friday night. But is it just the volume of people or is it just the number of activations and things that are going on around the facility?
The thing about this tournament, it's a place to be seen at now.
Right.
And
yeah.
that's it's good and bad.
Yeah.
You know, it brings fans out. It gets a different atmosphere.
Sure.
It's a different tournament.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily all the biggest golf fans.
No, no, no.
It's very much a party scene.
Yeah.
If you're going, it's a great bachelor party, bachelorette party. Saw tons of bachelorette parties
yeah.
there having a good time. Instagram, you know, what do you call it? Influencers out there
yeah,
all over the place.
Yeah.
But no, I think it's sweet. I actually think the final stretch is great. Those final
Agreed.
Four holes bring a lot of chaos. They bring a lot of fun. You know, 15 being very easy to get there, and two if you can find the fairway on that par five. 16 is 16.
Sure.
17
drivable
risk
par
reward
four,
drive.
Definitely. Yeah, lots of things happen, especially this year with the golf course as firm as it was. Balls kind of going all over the
lots
place.
Lots of guys in the water. Guys yeah. over the back, like flying it over, like. And then that drive on 18 is amazing. And, you know, if you go back, there's a video of Tiger and, you know, there's that quote, you know, that line he took was 323-yard carry, which was like 20 years ago now, which is crazy. That still, we were watching some practice rounds and guys are like, they're joking. Like, let's try the Tiger line. And they're still not getting over it.
Hmm.
And that's just, but yeah, no, it's a great tournament. It's fun. It's different. Would you want it every single week?
Mm.
Probably not, but I'm not against trying different things like that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was definitely a bit of a discussion this week. I heard a few people talking about that, and I think it does have its place in golf for sure. And I don't think there's, you know, obviously people could nitpick and one thing or another that they think is bad or whatever about it, but I think it does have its place in golf. As you say, it's not for every week on tour. It has its personality, but I'll tell you what, you know, even from a drama standpoint, yeah, I watched that back nine. I mean, pre, you know, Super Bowl party, I was glued to the TV watching that finish and you know, it was a tight race as well. So yeah, good on them for doing it. Raise a lot of money for the Thunderbirds, raise a lot of money for charity, raise a lot of money in that community,
Absolutely.
Which is super important as well. And you're right. Would the tour want that every week? I don't know if they can replicate that everywhere. I don't think it would be possible to, because it would take a long while to do that. And
it's a vacation spot too. You're getting
right.
people that are there for vacation.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you guys were there.
Exactly.
I mean,
I was there for vacation. You're not getting that at, you know, the Greenbrier.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, you're not getting.
No offense, West Virginia, but yeah.
No,
it's
just not in. It's not in their DNA in West Virginia, right?
Yeah.
It's just a different. It's a different atmosphere. So, I loved it. I think the guys that always are going to do well in that tournament are the guys that embrace it. You know, if you're going down there and you're expecting quiet, I did see some caddies kicking guys out. It's like, just embrace it. It's not going to help. Now, at the same time, and we'll get Kyle's take on this, and, you know, we give him a call in a bit, like, you still got to do your job as a caddy. And right. if your guy is getting yelled at for nonsense, then ask that guy to be removed. Sure, and I saw it many times, a couple of guys getting removed, and they think they're invisible out there, and you're not. You still are dealing with the PGA rules as a patron. But is there a more useless job than the guy holding the quiet signs on 16?
That one's near impossible to try and do that. But, you know, as we talked about, does the tour want more of it? Nah, they want more participation, but I don't think it needs to be every week. But, hey, you know what? It's got a spot in the game. I think it's a good thing. Gets lots of attention. Lots of people are talking about it outside of a major. I mean, again, how many regular season events get that out of it?
It's one of those ones, though. Like, outside of a major is one that it's a must-see. You got to go once, I think.
Now,
you got to go once.
Now, there's got to be some tour players. I mean, I haven't dug through their quotes and stuff through the years, but I'm certainly sure there's got to be some tour players that just don't want to go because of the atmosphere, and that's, you know, why
they
end up at the Saudi International or like, someplace else, or just take the week off.
Like, I don't even know. Was Patrick Reed there this week? Because that is not an atmosphere that he's going to do well
in. He was at the
in.
Saudi International.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Patrick Reed would not do well there. Anyone that, you know, that grew up in a country club and they expect silence and they expect everything proper. Don't go. Don't play in it.
That might be the last thing they'll get around there.
Don't play in it. But Webb Simpson did win, which is not a guy that you would expect as like digging into that and feeding into it. And he really didn't. He kind of just went about his business and ended up winning, you know, very clutch. I think the story that's coming out is less about Webb Simpson and him moving into the top 10 in the world, which is crazy to think as well. But Tony Finau just falls short again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it looked like he was somewhat in control, but obviously Simpson came in there and, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen when it came down to 18. And, you know, Simpson made that pot. He's been clutch. I dug into his stats today. He's only missed two cuts since the, I'm trying to think what event it was in 2018, but basically going back now, his last 10 starts, he's got seven top 10s in those last 10 starts, including that win, three second place finishes and another third place finish in that. So, you know, he's certainly trending. And for a guy who, you know, played really well for a while, was right up there, you know, in the top level of the world, the top
major
echelon.
Major champion. People forget he's a major champion.
Yeah. And then dropped back down again. And, you know, he's fought his way back now with, you know, with a different putting style. And I said it today. I called him a giant killer. I mean, everybody was expecting Tony Finau, this guy who could, you know, pound that golf course and tear it apart. And here's Webb Simpson with, you know, playing three wood down 18 and making birdie twice, you know, to one to get in the playoff and two to seal the deal. So, you know, good on Webb Simpson for that. And really, you know, if you're looking at him as far as majors for the year to come, I don't think you can discount him at all.
Absolutely not. He'll be at this point, he'll be in the Ryder Cup.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. There's no doubt he's been there many times before. He'll be back this year. But boy, does that club head go on a path that you would never see.
It's no.
going around the world behind him. And that's the funniest part. Everyone's like, oh, Webb Simpson's swing is so ugly. Webb Simpson's swing is perfect until it goes past his hip on the fall field.
Yeah, it doesn't matter at that point. It's just a look. And, I mean, it's the same. You compare it as far as Finau, you know, very unusual swing as well. And you know what? Webb's got six wins and Tony's got one.
Yeah.
So
Finau's technically, from a technical standpoint, if you're the coach, you're taking Webb Simpson's swing over Finau's swing all day, probably. Like, teaching a guy to bring his, you know, his seven iron to his hip and then say generate speed from there.
It's pretty hard for anybody. Not everybody can do that. They're not always capable to create enough force there, especially as much as he does. Mm-hmm. I certainly love certain skills that Tony Finau has, but obviously his ability to finish right now is certainly in doubt. And, you know, I was, you know, I won't say I was hoping, I'm not sitting there cheering, but, you know, it would have been nice to see him break through, because I think, given how he has played of late, going back into the fall as well, he had, you know, Finau had some good finishes then. I think, you know, if he can get that win, he can certainly break through and then start winning some more. But, you know, until now, he hasn't done it. Last win was 2016. Only win was 2016 in Puerto Rico. So he's going to have to find a way to dig in and, you know, get that last little bit so he can get past the players like Webb Simpson.
Yeah, I'm not worried about him, really. Like, this is a guy that put his own ankle back together and still finished top 10 in the Masters. Let's remember that. He's also a guy that never should even be here. as well. Like, we're talking to a guy that he made it here by going on the big break and grinding it out, right?
Long shot for sure.
Turn
pro at 17, you know, definitely a long shot story, which I think is why people, you know, cheer for him a little bit more, because they want that sort of storybook finish for him. And I expect he'll do well this year and he'll continue to play well, and would not be shocked to see him win once or twice even this year.
Yeah, it picked up like, what, $800,000?
Yeah, he did okay.
Something like that. Yeah, I think it'll be okay. Why don't we give Kyle a call? I know we chatted all week. Basically, when we were down there, ran into each other a couple times, and just kind of how he was managing dealing with the chaos, and just want to get his take from a real PGA Tour caddy, because I can barely read a yardage book at this point, so let's be honest here. So let's give Kyle a call and see what he's got to say about the Waste Management Open. All right, folks, we got Kyle Peters back on the podcast, coming off the Waste Management Open. Finished the week. What'd you finish the week? T50, somewhere around there? T45?
It was a two-way tie for 45th.
There you go. Not bad. Not bad week. Let's talk about the week, though. That place is insane, man. I don't even know how. I tried to describe it prior to giving you a call, and it's different. What are your thoughts overall?
Yeah, it definitely, as a caddy, from my perspective, it definitely wears you out. It seems like every day, you know, we're not only are we doing our jobs on the golf course, trying to help our player figure out, you know, how far they're hitting the ball, you know, where to land it, reading putts, wind, all that stuff, but we're also kind of dealing with all this stuff going on outside the ropes. You know, I got my eyes open, you know, for people making noises or, you know, messing with players or whatever, and it definitely wears you out every single day. But, you know, we get down to the last few holes and I'm like, man, just get me off the golf course.
Yeah, well, like, it's almost like you're using more senses than you're used to, right? Like, I think people get this idea of the tour, right? And they think that the week you're seeing at the Waste Management Open, that's what every week, every single day looks like. There's many days where you'll go 16 holes and you won't even see anybody. And now you're out here, you know, where hole one, you got a group of 20 guys there for a bachelor party dressed like they're caddies at Augusta National yelling at you on the first tee.
Yeah. We ran into those guys on 11. I forget what day it was, but they'll wear you out. I'm just eating a snack and they're just yelling at me for eating on the golf course. It was pretty funny to see those guys though.
Yeah. They were comedic. That's for sure. You run into any situations out there? Any guys you had to put your foot down?
Yeah. Saturday afternoon, we started on the back nine. And we got through 16, 17, 18, everything was fine. You know, it's constant noise there in 16, but that's what you'd rather have than someone just blurting out. And that's what we ran into. We got to, it was our 16th of the day, but number 7, because we were finishing on the back nine. And we're on the tee, and I'm staring at a guy the whole time, and he's got his hands around his mouth. Like, you could tell he's ready to scream something, and I've got eye contact with him the whole time, and I'm like, don't do it, man, don't do it, shaking my head. And right at the top of Corey's backswing, the guy's like, jackass, you know, trying to be like Happy Gilmore. And immediately I went right at him, and every group has a cop that walks with them, and our guy hopped right under there and did the dirty work and got him thrown out. So
yeah, and Corey's got like, he's got almost like a pause at the top of his swing, right? And that's gonna throw him right off. Was he able to pull off of it?
No, he had a really good shot up to about 20 feet, and he got up to the green and he three putted it, and I was a little worried that I might have flustered him a little bit. You know, I was thinking we might have got up to the green, and he's still thinking about what just happened. But after the round, I talked to him. I've never done that before. And I told him I didn't even think about it. It was just an instinct. And he said it was a good play. He wasn't flustered at all. So hopefully I did the right thing. And I guess it's a learning experience too. So
yeah, I mean, that's your job, right?
Yeah, for me and the guy that got thrown out.
Yeah, we'll see about that. There'll be another guy next year down there doing the exact same thing. What do you think of the golf course? We kind of talked about that earlier before you came on. And, you know, for me, I played the Champions course early in the week. I thought it was just as good, if not better. The course overall, what were your thoughts?
You got to drive it. If you're not a long hitter, you got to drive it straight there. Because those bunkers are placed perfectly right at the dog legs or right around 280 to 300. So for a guy like JB Holmes and Tony Finau, for those guys, they can carry it over those bunkers and they have a big advantage, but you also still have to be able to hit it straight. And they can kind of, you know, the further you hit it, the easier it is to get going sideways. I haven't looked at Webb's stats at all for the week, but I'm sure he hit it pretty straight to be able to score the way he did. And the greens were firm and fast too. So you had the ball striking and around the greens, those were keys too. So
yeah, I was seeing a lot of balls come up short and roll right through. Did you guys have to change your game plan at all to make up for those greens and how firm they were?
Yeah, we didn't want to be chipping at all because chipping was really tough. By the end of the week, those greens were so firm, and like we had a chip on it was on number 7 on Sunday, but it was like it landed on concrete. So ball striking was key, and there was some points where you didn't even have a chance to hold the green, you know. So when you miss the greens, yeah, getting it up and down was very difficult.
So what are your thoughts overall with this tournament? Is this a good thing for golf? Do you like having it, you know, as a different tournament each week? Obviously, you touched on as a caddy, it's exhausting, but is it a good type of exhausting? Like at the end of the week, you're still happy you did it.
Yeah, I do. I'm happy I got to do it. I'm worn out. I'm very happy that I have a week off this week. We're not playing. So I'm at home just relaxing. As far as like growing the game, I do think it does grow the game because the more eyes you can get on golf, it can't hurt it. You know what I mean? There's different ways to look at it. You know, a lot of the people that are there don't even watch the golf at all. They're just there to party or whatever. But there's things that they can learn and take away from it, just like that instance that we had on number 7. Hopefully that guy and the other people that were there, it teaches them that you can't do things like that. The more eyes you get on it, I think the better it is for the game. It also increases the purses, so it's more money in our pockets, which is great. I can't complain about that. Overall, it's like it's a tough week. And it'll wear you out, but it once a year, I think, is okay. I would rather not have every week of the year be like that, but once is all right.
No, I agree with you on that. I think it's a blessing in disguise, even though it is Pebble Beach and it's probably one of the nicer, you know, courses and areas you're going to see all year. Having a week off after that, just from the mental exhaustion, that golf course is not a hard walk by any means, but it just sounds like you're just more mentally drained than anything.
Yeah. And I looked at the weather out at Pebble, and it's like 45 degrees there. I'm at home in Charleston. It's 75 here, so I'm enjoying the nice weather here.
Yeah, you should. So when are you back on the bag? What's the schedule looking like in the next couple of weeks?
Next week, we're playing L.A. We got a big stretch coming up, so it goes L.A., the WGC down in Mexico. We're playing Honda, Arnold Palmer, the Players, and then a week off. So we're coming up on 5 in a row.
Early in the week of the Waste Management, I should have touched on this. They had a big caddy event at Top Golf. How did that go, and what was that for?
It was good. It was for the listeners that don't know about the Caddy Network. It's basically they have Instagram, Twitter. It's a social media platform from a different perspective, not from the players. Most people are interested in what's going on the course with players and their whole deal. The Caddy Network kind of gives you a different viewpoint from our perspective. So you see what we're doing throughout the week, what we're doing on our off weeks, what we're doing on the golf course, how we're working, things like that. And mainly it was a meeting about that. I think there's 150 caddies that are members of the Caddy Network, and it was kind of mainly informing us about the social media aspect, kind of things like this, doing podcasts, anything that we could do to kind of grow the caddy network, I guess, and which is also growing the game too. So they kind of taught us a few things there, and then afterwards we had dinner and Topgolf. So
I saw this great tweet. I don't know if you saw it. It was basically going on about having a caddy tournament, and the winner of the caddy tournament, and they have to be on the PGA Tour. They end up getting into like the Zurich, and you're playing your caddies play or your players playing partner that week. What are your thoughts on that?
There are a couple caddies that would be able to play in a PGA Tour event. I can tell you that.
What's his face? He's out with Stuart Sink. He's a player, right? I'm drawing a blank right now. Yeah, Henley.
Kip Henley. Chris Stroud's guy's a really good player. Nate Lashley's caddy was a good college player. I mean, that was 10 years ago. I haven't played golf with him. Let's see. The guy who was caddying for Hudson Swafford, he's a good stick. I actually caddied when he was playing in second stage and missed finals by one shot. And that's when he decided to hang it up, and he started caddying for Jess Korda and won his first week with her. So that was the end of his playing career. But, yeah, there's a lot of good players. The only thing that would worry me about that would be if somebody had a fluke day or whatever. I mean, that caddy tournament would have to be 4 days. You know, if somebody just had a fluke day and got out there, that could be a disaster.
Yeah, you get like Dale Vallely out there winning. He just doesn't get enough.
Dale could play a little bit, but I think his problem is the more he plays, the worse he plays. Normally he just comes out after a month off and can shoot around par, but the more he works at it, the worse his scores go, I think.
Did you see that video of him eating chips in the gym while Abraham was working out?
Oh yeah, Dale's a beauty.
This guy's an absolute character. Good Canadian boy. We talked about all the events, you know, this event and how exhausting it was. What events are you looking forward to in the schedule? Obviously, the Players probably a super exciting one, but is there any other, you know, underrated event on the schedule you're really looking forward to? I'm sure you're going to say the Canadian Open, but we'll give you others to pump.
Yeah, I haven't, out of this next stretch that's coming up, I haven't done Riviera. I haven't done the WGC in Mexico, but I'm interested to get there and see that tournament. Apparently it's supposed to be the most like secure tournament that we play on tour. Like we there's a private charter for all the players that goes down there. We obviously get picked up, having a police escort to the hotel. And from what I hear, I think we go underneath the hotel.
Okay.
And anytime we leave with a police escort, there's guards there the whole time. You pull up to the golf course, there's guards lining the driveway. You get there, and it's like the most secure tournament that there is. So I'm interested to see that. Number one right now that I'm looking forward to is the Masters. I'm ready to get back there. The Olympics, those are the two big things on our schedule. So
didn't even think of the Olympics. That's got to be exciting. Our close buddy Ryan DeVoe was able to do that at the last Olympics. What did he tell you about that experience that's got you stoked?
We've talked about it, and I was like, man, how was it hanging out in the village? And he's like, dude, you're just hanging out around all these like perfect specimens, and you're just sitting there like, man, I need a case of beer or something, you know? So yeah, you're just around all these chiseled athletes, and you're like, man, I don't belong here.
Would you call yourself an Olympian when you're there?
Gosh, that's a tough question. I've talked with one of the guys, Ralph Bauer, that went down with, who did he caddy for? I can't remember who he caddied for, but he caddied for one of the Canadians at the last Olympics. It was David Hearn.
Hearn?
I believe.
Cool.
So he caddied for David Hearn, and he's like, yeah, you're considered an Olympian. You're part of the staff or whatever. They give you a participation medal, I think is what he said. So if you're on the staff, I guess you're considered an Olympian. So,
I love it. I think
I'm from the States. I'll rock the shit out of some red and white for you guys.
Oh, you guys win gold. I expect a tattoo.
Yeah. That'd be great. but we still, those teams aren't decided yet. So nope. We still have to play well, and it's definitely not a lock yet, but
no, not at
hoping
all.
For the best, yeah.
I can't wait for that. Kyle Peppers on Twitter, Olympian as your only thing in your bio, and then the Canadian flag tattooed on the back of your arm with a gold medal underneath.
Yeah, if we won a gold medal, I would probably do that.
All right. All right. Anything else you want to get to before we wrap things up here? We always love chatting with you. But let's leave it at this. What was the most unusual thing you saw last week?
Oh, man. Most unusual thing. I actually heard a story about when the bird's nest used to be on the golf course. We played with Nick Taylor on Saturday and Sunday, and his caddy skillet is hilarious to just get to walk around and hang out with. But he was telling me when they used to have the bird's nest on the golf course, you would come out like Sunday morning for a morning tea time, and there would be like people passed out in the bunkers on the sides of hills and things like that. So that course is or that tournament has a lot of crazy stories. They also had there was a college guy that like tried to steal a $12 beer, and he gets chased by the cops, and he like hops a barbed wire fence, and on the other side of the golf course there's a canal with water in it, and the guy like hopped in the canal, tried to swim across, and there's like police waiting for him on the other side just to get a $12 beer. So those are just like a couple of the stories that you hear from the waste management. There's some a lot of crazy stuff that goes on there.
Oh, there were some great chants, some that we can't repeat on the podcast. One directed at Gino Benelli. If you want to go on his Twitter, yeah, go check out that one. There was a flasher at one point. This tournament is out of control, but I can't wait to go back. Peppers, we appreciate you coming back on the podcast. Can't wait to see that tattoo and the summer of 2020, yeah, buddy.
Yeah, anytime. Thank you guys for calling me.
All right, thanks, Kyle, for coming back on, telling some good stories about the Waste Management Open. A little bit of technical issue. Scotty had to step
that's
okay out.
That's, you know, all good.
I mean, it happens.
I mean, really, it's about him anyways, right?
It is. It's not about you. You had your birthday. We addressed it off the top. Move on, man.
Well, you know, I'm 50 now. I need a rest every now and then.
Yeah,
so,
a quick nap. Quick nap.
Quick nap.
He's back. We're back for the back half of the podcast.
There you go.
And he'll be back you're here for the tip, at least, the end of the week tip.
Yeah, I don't think anybody wants you giving them the tip.
Oh.
Well, maybe.
Probably not.
No, okay.
Lost my swing pretty quickly down there. I might need to come back for another lesson.
A little touch-up?
They right. Still on the house. I might be running up a tab here.
All right, we'll take care of you.
A lot of other stuff going on in the golf world this week. You know, that tournament in Phoenix is great. My favorite moment of the week, Graham McDowell.
Yeah,
awesome.
For sure.
Loved it. Well, I got up early on Sunday, not on purpose. I was just up early, a little bit jet lagged, the opposite way somehow.
Weren't getting any sleep. It was the Phoenix Open, right?
Exactly, Phoenix Open week. But I was up watching Graham, cheering him on. Nice to see him back in the winner's circle, and similar to Lee Westwood in the sense of like,
yeah, very much.
If both those guys are on a Ryder Cup team this year, I'm locked in.
Well, I saw a tweet by Padraig Harrington going, ooh, I might have to rethink my vice captains, talking about McDowell.
Yep.
And then obviously Lee Westwood as well, which, you know, obviously, you know, you get two guys that could be making the team and not being there as, you know, just vice captain. So that's really good to see. So, yeah, Graham, amazing to watch. I have a little bit of a rooting interest in this one. Just John Graham, his putting coach, is a friend, somebody that I go see as well from my own putting. And then Mitch Sadowski, who's his trainer, is a friend as well. So, you know, he has a lot of team members, a lot of people behind him. You know, we talked about it on the show before when he won last year. He rededicated himself back to the game of golf. Really worked hard, wants to do some things that his kids can see. As he said, he wants to be in that top 50. He wants to, you know, have his job for a little while more. And for him to sit there and go, you know, he was 238 in the world the end of 2018, got up to 121 by the end of last year, and now all of a sudden he's back into the top 50 in the world at 47th, and got his 11th European Tour victory.
Watch out, he could be fighting for that Olympic spot as well if he keeps it going. Obviously, you know, the Olympics are
a little while away.
And it's a different thing where, you know, I get them all mixed up. I believe he is Northern Irish, I believe.
He is from Northern Ireland. Yeah, so he's from Port Rush.
Yeah, so then it's what country do you play for in the whole nine yards. So, well, we'll get to that at some point when we get there. I'm not too worried about it. Couple other just quick stories. Brooks Koepka will be dropping out of the number one spot in the world. Not really because of bad play. It's just, you know, he's been hurt. He obviously was in at that tournament in Saudi Arabia, I believe.
Saudi, yeah, Saudi International. Yeah. I mean, the problem for Brooks is, you know, when we look at the world rankings and the rollover for 2 years, you know, he gained a lot of points 2 years ago right at that time, and he's going to be losing those off of his record. So as a result of it, you know, he starts dropping points, and if you're not gaining them back, then you are going to drop. And it's a pretty tight race at the top there, and he has lost more points than anyone so far this year. And as a result of it, yeah, he is calculated to drop out of that number one spot in the next couple of weeks.
I believe Rory's supposed to, based on what they're saying.
Yeah, Rory's number two. If John Rahm had have won last week, he could have got to number one as well.
Weird. Like thinking John Rahm, number one player in the world. Like when was like he won?
Well,
did he win last year? I don't know. I'm like drawing a blank on.
Well,
it.
Worldwide, you know, you're winning other events that are not on the PGA Tour.
It's just not, you know, it's not that pick that you think of, right? Like when you think of the number ones in the world, but then you go back, you know, 10 years when Luke Donald was number one forever,
sure.
But Luke was winning tournaments.
Yeah, well, people had that discussion as well, even regarding Brooks Koepka. He was winning majors, but he wasn't winning other events as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of ways to get there, to get to number one. You know, consistent play worldwide, obviously, you know, in playing at events that have the bigger, stronger fields will keep you up there. It's a lot harder for guys that are not in that top 50, not playing in the WGCs, not playing in the majors. Really hard to break in there, which is why it's important for McDowell, for an example, to get back in that top 50 and all of a sudden be able to start playing in some of those big events again. Mm-hmm. And you're going against those fields, you're getting higher points, and it's easier to stay in there. Of course, you know, it goes the other way too for other players.
Yeah, speaking of that, Jordan Spieth outside the top 50. Two things. I didn't realize how tall this guy was. He walked by me.
He's a big dude compared to what you think he is.
You don't think you think he's like the Rickies of the world, who's a very, very small man.
Yeah.
But no, drops out of the top 50. He looked fine. I was watching him on the range, watching him on the course. I believe he missed the cut by one. Like,
yeah.
It's not, it wasn't like things are heading in the right direction, hopefully, for Jordan, but it's just such a weird drop from where he was. It's remarkable.
And he's in that same situation as well. I mean, the problem for him is that, you know, he ended the year at 44th in the world. He's now down to 55th, just, you know, after missing, you know, a cut. And he was number three in the world 2 years ago when he was gaining a whole bunch of points. So you all of a sudden drop them. So, you know, we can't always use the official world golf rankings as a measurement of how a player is playing. I mean, you know, we see that all the time. We see players that are ranked very low in the world, then all of a sudden jump up there and get a win and work their way. They may not be there every week, but I don't think it's a really efficient way to judge a way a guy is playing. And as you said, you know, he didn't look that bad out there. But as we know, you know, on the PGA Tour, the difference between, you know, 1 in 50 and 50 and 100 can be like a quarter of a stroke per round. It is a really, really fine line.
It's crazy. It is crazy.
Phil. That's
T3.
Another one. Yeah.
Guy lost all that weight. He's fasting. He's drinking coffee all day long or something. I saw this interview with him. T3 last week. Good job. Nice to see Phil back in. And, you know, Phil could go out. Would you be shocked if Phil won the Masters this year?
I wouldn't be. You know, he again, we're talking official world golf rankings. He's back up to 72. He had dropped 86. But, you know, he's going to be 50 in June, which is, you know, hard to believe. I mean, having just faced that myself, I just sort of wonder, are we asking too much of him? I mean, a lot of people are still talking about Phil like he's 35 years old or 40 years old when
just
he really
he acts that way.
Well, I guess that's the way it is. Yeah. And you know, again, the golf ball doesn't know how old you are. Well, it's a matter of where you hit it and how you do
it. Faster than ever, he claims.
But it would be interesting to see, you know, he's going back to Wingfoot, where we talked about that on the podcast.
I'm such an idiot.
You know, what could happen there? Yeah, could he still win? It's hard to say for Augusta National. I mean, you know, obviously he's got wins there. He's got experience. You know, he's got length. But you know, he just needs to bring other aspects of the game together. But I don't expect we'll see him at 72 for too long. He's just too skilled of a player. I think it's just a matter of, you know, when he puts his mind to it that he can make some things happen, and this might be a start for him.
What's a bigger story? I mean, you know, I know the answer, but like, not necessarily. I think what should be the bigger story is the question I'm asking. If Phil won this year, mm-hmm. the Masters, right. specifically, should that be a bigger story than Tiger winning last year?
I, you know,
49 years old, oldest Masters champion.
I mean, that would obviously be a big part of it. I think, you know, because he hasn't had, obviously he's had rheumatoid arthritis, but I don't think he's had the major injuries that Tiger has. And Tiger still, you know, despite Phil playing in his shadow and being an amazing player, and, you know, when you look at his record, it's iconic and it's, you know, World Golf Hall of Fame worthy. I think, you know, Tiger still moves the needle more than Phil. Phil's kind of a 1B. He always has been. There's some people that obviously they're in Phil camp.
You could
versus...
almost argue that Tiger's 1A, 1B, and then Phil.
Yeah, true. I agree with that. But I think there was always, during that era, there was a camp where some people either liked Phil or they liked Tiger. They felt it was a zero-sum thing. They couldn't mm-hmm. like them both. I respected what both of them did. I think it would be a huge story, and I think it would be a huge story because it's on the back of Tiger winning last year, and the fact that, you know, so much emphasis is put on all these young and up and coming players, and, you know, here's a couple of grizzled veterans, you know, all of a sudden playing the part of Shakira and J-Lo doing the halftime show at the Super Bowl, right?
Settle down there, old man. We don't want you to go Jeb Bush on us.
No. I'm just saying, as far as from a perspective, you know, people all of a sudden, you know, write people off because of a certain age, but the golf ball doesn't know that. And just because a player is, you know, Matt Wolf and he's coming up, or a Colin Morikawa, doesn't guarantee they're all of a sudden going to jump to the top and start winning majors.
Now that Morikawa.
You know, he's talented.
I had a front row seat.
Yeah, how'd you like that?
A couple holes.
Talented, eh?
That's all. I just can make a noise. That's all. It's beautiful. It is beautiful. Let's talk about something that's not beautiful. And I tweeted out this today that you didn't need to show up for the first hour, and I let you off the hook.
I know where we're going now.
The USGA is the USGA, and
you got to remember, it was not just the USGA. This is a joint report, USGA and RNA.
I'm blaming just them. The RNA has done me only good. The USGA, you know, I'll let you explain it, and then what I'm going to do is I'm just going to rip apart the USGA in a moment.
Well, go ahead if you like, but I'll take it from this standpoint, and I'll say I have some friends at the USGA. I have some friends in the RNA as well, but, you know, that doesn't bias where my report is. They are doing their due diligence in coming up with a distance insight project, which they've been running for several years, and creating a report regarding the implications of hitting distance in golf. Now, obviously, the report came out today, 102 pages. I think there's 56 other supporting
documents.
Yeah,
our table here is about to fold in half. You got all these papers.
Yeah, well, I just brought the what we'd call the executive summary, which is just the conclusion.
The rest was in the trunk, and that was why your bumper was scraping
that's all
on the ground when you came in?
So I dug through the 16 pages of this, and people have to understand, although people will sit there and argue, and a lot of people jump in, lots of people had hot takes today, I tried to stay out of it as much as possible because I want to give it a measured look, as they are as well. You know, they're not just making these decisions in 2 minutes. They're actually, you know, studying a lot of data. There's thousands of pages of supporting documentation that are going here. And I don't think everybody really understood what the conclusions were. They automatically think it's just, you know, the USGA railing against everybody in golf. That's not really it. And there's not really any solutions that are providing this. This is just really a preliminary report that they're putting out. But I will just say this. It's a very complicated issue regarding distance and the golf ball, how it's going. I am in the camp that I don't want to see a rollback of the golf ball. And we've talked about this a fair bit. Are there issues that come from the golf ball going too far? Yeah, you can't ignore that. But also ignore it in this where, you know, some things I think that we're missing. I mean, they discussed, you know, golf courses having to build bigger golf courses. But at the same time, they're also saying people need to move forward more on their tees. So, I mean, it's kind of a juxtaposition as far as going at it.
Pick one.
And again, that's part of the reason they're presenting the report. They're looking for feedback in the next 45 days, and then they're going to be working more studies in the next 9 months to 12 months before there's any other conclusions. Now, the last thing I'll say before we'll let you just kind of go ahead and
you're
say your thing.
And go.
No. You can go on your points. And believe me, I've got to look back more into this myself as not only a golf journalist, but, you know, as somebody who's, you know, coaching golf and different aspects of the game. But, you know, the one thing that I think they sort of missed, they talked about 48 golf projects that had been built. I think the period was 2011 to 2016. The fact these golf courses were built, you know, averaging 6,900 yards long, which was way longer than some of the other ones. They sort of ignored the fact that sometimes, now they did mention that sometimes the length and things are required and the more space required for the property is because they're housing developments or whatever. But in a lot of cases, you know, the length of the golf course, it has to do with the ego of the developer and from the marketing aspect where they want to have these 7,000-yard golf courses.
And they want to be able to – they want to have this 7,500-yard
course. And call it a championship golf course.
So they can host an event one day, right?
Well, like that's like chances are they're never going to do that anyways. But, and I mean, I played two golf courses in Florida, you know, from 7,200-yard-plus tees. And I guarantee you nobody had been on those tee boxes for a long, long while. But the problem is, from a marketing standpoint, and they do recognize that a little bit, that people have gotten attuned to distance being part of the game and hearing about that. And for some reason, people don't think that, you know, a 6,500-yard golf course or a 6,000-yard golf course.
I played a 6,000-yard golf course.
Is worthy of play.
In Phoenix, and it was great.
I played a 2,400-yard golf course, par, you know, for Winter Park. And you know what? I had just as much fun, or probably even more on that than the 3,600-yard one. So there's a lot of things to be taken from this report. Some stuff I like, some stuff I don't like, but in general, my general consensus overall is the fact that, you know, we're worrying about 500 people, and that's the biggest thing that seems to be happening here. These elite top golf associations are worrying about 500 people that are playing the game as professionals, let's say 1,000 total or whatever, when there's 25 million other people that are playing the game. And as far as I'm concerned, associations, while they are involved in professional golf in some ways, and they are there to, you know, as the stewards of the game to help out with certain things, in the end, it's the people that are putting their handicaps in the computers and are paying their association fees as amateurs that are the most important part of this game.
100%. They're the one buying the clubs. They're the one buying 100%. The balls. Name one PGA Tour player that's bought balls in the last.
Yeah,
it doesn't happen.
And we're not discounting what their role is in the game as heroes and professionals and that part of it. But in the end, the number of golf courses that are in this country, for an example, or in the United States that are going to host a professional level tour event that require a golf course that's of massive length is very small. And there are many thousands of other ones that are servicing the golfer, the real golfer that's out there.
PGA Tour is canceled tomorrow. I'm still golfing.
Yeah, for sure.
You're still
yeah.
golfing. So here's where I was taking it. So I talked about that, like this idea that I believe that a lot of these courses that are built on these 8,000-yard courses are built in this way of maybe we'll host a U.S. Open one day.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll host this. Like,
that's an ego play.
It
almost,
is very
right?
much an ego play. Here's where I'm having the biggest issue with this all. Name one other sport that is trying to take speed and technology and athleticism out of the sport that doesn't have to do with safety.
No, they do. Yeah,
right?
And
like,
you're right.
Only
and
safety is
right.
the reason.
And I get that. And I've seen arguments. Ian Andrew, a Canadian architect, has discussed, you know, his point on it and the fact that safety corridors need to be wider with the golf ball going further and things like that. And I get that. I totally get that. And I totally respect that that's part of the discussion here. What's interesting, though, is that obviously, you know, as part of the rules of golf, there's a discussion there that it's about retaining skill levels so that there is skill required in the game of golf. And I get it.
Yeah.
But even from a shorter distance, there's still skill.
Absolutely.
Even though people will sit there and argue with, oh, I'm just going to hit wedge and everything. There's a lot of factors that go into it. I mean, this week at Pebble Beach, we have three golf courses that are under 7,000 yards. And they're all being played by the best players in the world, but they're in different conditions than the Waste Management last week that's firm and fast and hard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they are talking about in this report about the future of the game and the fact that golf courses, if they go to less use of water, pesticides, things like that, that we're going to see golf courses that are firmer and harder. Well, you know what? Even if it allows the player to hit the golf ball further, they're not necessarily going to score less. It's just going to change what they have to do from a skill perspective. Just as skills that we used to have in the 1910s, and I wasn't around then, even though you're going to go for that joke, they were different skills then. So the game does evolve. The game does change like every other sport, mm-hmm. and skills change. So you can't expect players of today to have the ability to run the ball along the ground and do some of the things that were done 100 years ago.
No.
So yes, you know what? There's a lot to be taken from this. And I think people need to really kind of measure all the different aspects of it before they come to a decision. But certainly I think for most amateurs that are playing the game, I don't have any amateurs that come to me as a golf coach and say, I want to hit it shorter.
No, absolutely. I saw a great tweet today. Actually, it was like, can't wait to see the first ad after they roll back the driver. It says, we tried. Yeah. Like it's as far as they let us to take it.
Yeah. Now I can see them drawing a line in the sand.
Yeah.
But you've got to remember that, you know, golf associations and regarding the rules are the ones that let everything creep up and creep up and creep up. It's really hard to put the genie back in the bottle. We've discussed that before, mm-hmm. regarding the ball. Now there's some provisions in here talking about the possibility of a localized rule for somebody to maybe use a different modified ball or whatever. Again, there's no defined solutions. These are just discussion points that are in here. But I think, you know, if they're going to have limits, they've got to enforce them. But I would hesitate to see a big rollback. And I also don't think the number of golf courses that they're discussing about being obsolete. Name me one golf course that's obsolete. Yes, there's golf courses that maybe can't host a championship venue, but
who cares?
But Marion, but Marion hosted the U.S. Open, and the score was +1, and it was a short golf course. Yeah. So again, in the whole scale of things, in the game of golf, and we talk about the whole game of golf, it's not relative to the health, I think, of the game overall. And people can disagree. That's fine. They're going to have their opinions as well. But this is just my perspective so far.
Yeah, I like that I said I was going to rant, and I don't even think I've spoken.
Yeah, sorry.
Like, I was like, I won't rant, but, you know, I'm 50, so I'm going to rant as long as I want. My thought, like I saw one out there, what if we have rules like baseball, right? Where baseball, the professional game has this, and the amateurs have this. Baseball actually went the other way. Follow baseball. They changed the ball to go further.
Yeah.
Yeah. They
for
the bat,
entertainment purposes.
For entertainment purposes. Yes, yeah. The bat is still wooden. The reason the bat's still wooden is because it's always been wooden, and they want that to be, you know, at least consistent with Hall of Fame numbers and all that stuff. And that's why they denied
there's a funny thing. If all of a sudden they said, oh, we're going to take 15% off the golf ball, but just for the pros. I mean, how does that affect the entertainment value as well?
It makes it worse. Like, the coolest thing, going to PGA, you stand behind a tee block and you watch a guy bomb it down there, right?
Yeah.
And it's... like, I can't do that. But the thing about golf...
But you don't want to be just level with that person. You want them to be up on that, you know, that basically that pedestal that you go, wow, they're more skilled than I am.
The coolest part about golf for many people is that you are able to play the exact same course that these professionals are playing. You can play that same tee with the same ball and the same club, and you can compare yourself to it. In tennis, you don't get to go play on Wimbledon. No, you don't. In hockey, you don't. Your men's league team doesn't go play at the Scotiabank Arena versus the Montreal Canadiens.
And you can move up to more forward tees to get the same length clubs into it or whatever. And I mean, they do say that in the report, which again, we talked about and I mentioned there. You know, they talk about the fact that some people some clubs are not making as much many forward tees and things, but you know, it's sort of, you know, and then they say,
it's a different problem, though.
It's a whole different issue or whatever. And they're talking about the issue of the longest players is really what they're talking about in most cases. And they say that specifically in the report. But yeah, the other subject on the side, yeah, you know what? Sure. There has to be a little bit more education to golfers to realize that they can have more fun by moving forward. And the USGA has had some campaigns towards that, but they have to realize that everybody has been talking about distance, and, you know, for so long, you know, that's the expectation. And that's what's happened as a result of the marketing. And you can't fault golf courses or developments for doing that mad marketing, which happened in the 90s and 2000s, where they always talked about our 7,200 yard golf, even though nobody plays from back there or should play from back there.
The other thing, talk about this being for the longest people. They're still going to be the longest out there. So now Zach Johnson, who is not exciting to watch. Like, I mean, don't lie to yourself in saying Zach Johnson is your favorite player to watch. Now, instead of him hitting it 275 down the middle, we're watching Zach Johnson hit 250 down the middle, right? who's going to watch Zach Johnson go out and hit 250 down the middle, right? It's just not going to happen. So that's the thing. My problem with this whole thing, Scotty, is that it's the USGA that's doing it. If it was another governing body that hasn't made poor decision after poor decision after poor decision, and I know you have friends there and you're not going to say that per se.
No. But they certainly admit to making some mistakes as well.
Yeah, but like if it was anyone else, I might be a little bit more lenient into it. But I know the USGA, if history is going to repeat itself. And if it doesn't, I will come on here and I'll eat my shoe like I did after saying Rory was going to win a major last year. I just have a feeling they're going to screw this up again. And I guess at this point, there's no point of keeping going on about it because it's just a report now.
It's
going
to be hard to keep everybody happy. And I think the issue here is that it's in a modern time when those situations, like you said, have happened during U.S. Opens and USGA events. And had this happened 30 years ago when there wasn't as much media scrutiny or things and, you know, reports were made and they set the rules and that's the way it was and they enforced it, we probably wouldn't notice it as much. But obviously, everybody's got a voice now. Everybody's got an avenue to, you know, to voice that. But you know, they are the governing bodies. That's what it comes down to. So, I don't see this being all of a sudden dream scenario being taken over by some other association. That's not the reality of it. Let's just hope that they come to a conclusion that makes the balance of the people happy and that it's somewhat fair.
We will see. Why don't we take a quick break? We'll chat a little bit about the PGA show. And some notable products that stood out to you. And then we'll hit the mailbag and wrap things up.
All right, sounds
good. A little
bit
of a longer episode this week, but the guy that wasn't going to rant went on a tangent for 15 minutes, and here we are. So we'll grab a quick break, and we'll be right back. All right, Scotty, you're back from Florida. I'm back from Arizona. We were down at the PGA show. I was at the Wasted Management Open. One of us was working. One of us wasn't. Let's talk about the PGA show. How was it? What were your thoughts? Anything notable? Anything that shocked you or you're excited about?
I don't know if there's anything that really shocks me anymore. I mean, 28 PGA shows and going to see it. I really still say it's not so much about a product show. You certainly see a few things that are in there. It's definitely a people show, a relationship show. Got to see a few things. The demo day, unfortunately, super cold. I think they said it was the coldest day in Florida in 3 years. So that wasn't really complimentary to going out and testing a lot of equipment. But, you know, just bopping around. I saw a cool new speaker from Bushnell. It also had a built-in GPS in it. So it was a large size one. It's getting a lot of attention. It has a built-in remote, kind of magnetic, goes on the top. It's almost like the shape of a ball marker. Hmm. FlightScope had a new smaller launch monitor called the Mevo Plus that was out there.
Yeah, that thing looks cool.
Is that
something you could see more, average players affording, I guess?
Yeah, I think that's really where that market has really been heading towards. It's been heading towards something that's a little bit more affordable, kind of out of the Cadillac stuff where you're looking at the, you know, TrackMan at $32,000, but getting into something that's more consumer level, may not have as many parameters or things, but I think this got a lot of people's attention just because it was something that not only they could use kind of outdoors in the range, but they could also use it as a simulator as well. I tested it. I guess I went back to the booth probably 3 times to go through some testing and to hit some shots. Found a lot of great features out of it. Had, you know, kind of a nice range features, skills, apps to it. Spin rates, I think, were a little bit low for me when I was doing some of the testing, what I found. But I'd be interested to try it out a little bit more and possibly take it outside. But, you know, it checks in about 2,500 Canadian or so. So certainly reasonable if somebody's going to do like a garage project or something like that where they want a simulator and, you know, sort of in that same vein as the SkyTrack was the last few years. But something in this case that is an actual radar unit.
That's cool. Well, I'm sure we'll be going over all the products that are coming out and giving some opinions. I saw some TaylorMade putters that came out recently that were...
The Truss, yeah.
Yeah, there was some nice ones and one that was, one only a mother could love.
You know what? It's been interesting with that one because I was actually having a discussion at the PGA show, and forgive me for the name drop, and I'll put it out there, but Scotty Cameron, having a talk with him
Ooh.
about... Yeah, exactly. But we were actually talking about social media and people's reaction from, you know, still photos and seeing a design. And we sort of saw that same reaction with this truss putter, which basically has what, you know, amounts to a truss sort of in the hosel, which is a triangular shaped sort of hosel. And I was able to test that in the fall when I was down at, when I was at TaylorMade. And I can tell you, even watching tour players use that, they were surprised by the results from it. It looks very traditional, or fairly traditional, from an address standpoint. You can't really see it as far as that hosel shape, but certainly a lot of people are, you know, going nuts on it, even though they haven't tested it. And the whole point was in that discussion with Scotty Cameron is that, you know, you can't just judge something by the picture. You have to really see how it performs. And I can tell you, you know, Nick Taylor loves his spider putter, but he was shocked when he was using that truss putter. I mean, it was right there for his first time testing it out and hitting it. And, you know, he was, I don't know if he was really curious because he loves his spider putter. But he certainly was kind of surprised how solid it was, especially off like toe hits, heel strikes, and the fact that, you know, the ball didn't go off his line as much as it might. So, you know, in the end, three players had it in play at the Phoenix Open, Ben On, Luke List, and Matt Wolf. Now, granted, you know, it's
one of those names did all right.
yeah. But, you know, the fact that, you know, it's about performance. And, yeah, you know what? You might not love the look of a certain club. But, hey, if we look back, you know, a bunch of years and we look at the Ping Irons, you know, they got mocked to death when they first came out years ago.
The square strike?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I won't necessarily go with
that. The alien wedge?
Yeah, but you know what? But the thing is, if it performs and has some engineering behind it, I mean, think about that. If that wasn't the case for the Ping I2 iron, you know, it wouldn't be as iconic as it is.
Sidebar, what was the commercial where the guy, every time he hit a driver,
Jack Ham. The hammer. Jack Ham.
People thought that was dumb, and it was. we're going to talk a lot of products over the next couple weeks.
Definitely.
Lots of stuff's going to come out. Keep your eye on Golf WRX so you can see, you know, the what's in the bags going on. We just plug those guys every single week, and all they do is the Rob Millers of the world just make fun of us on Twitter. I don't know what to do.
They're good lads. I spent some time with them at the PGA show with Ryan Brath. Actually, we went to a putter event at a mini putt for the new Mizuno putters together, and we actually played on the same team. Unfortunately, we lost out in a Ryder Cup event to Team Europe, but I will tell you, our team did manage 9 hole-in-ones, which was pretty solid. But
sweet.
Yeah, no. Oh, they're
not
great.
A big deal.
No, they're great. They're great guys, and certainly they get the skinny on you know, tour photos, and yeah. So, anyways, pay attention to that, and we'll have a lot of stuff on flagstick.com as well as when the new products come out.
Love it. We haven't had a mailbag in a couple weeks. Word is that we had to really narrow it down. It was overflowing,
pretty much,
with questions. So why don't we hit the mailbag and we'll answer the questions of the listeners.
All right. First one's first here. Who do you think will be the next Canadian player to win on the PGA Tour? I've got my thoughts on that, but you go ahead on that one.
Sure. I got to pick Corey. I think he's got another win coming this year. The other guys are still playing great. You know, Nick Taylor had a good week. Graham Dillette was still up in the air. I would be kind of a shock. It'd be an awesome story if Graham Dillette came and finally got that win, but also, you know, just from that back injury, got out there. Gligic is, it's still a rookie season. Could he win? Absolutely. He could win, right? Like, I wouldn't be shocked at all. Could a dark horse Monday qualify into something like you know, like a Corey Connors win? Who knows? But right now, it'd be hard not to pick Corey. His game's looking great. His swing looks great. His caddy's great. I got Corey Connors.
Yeah, we're a little biased that way. I think Corey's the one, although obviously Adam Hadwin's still playing well and right up there as well. Those are our top two players from Canada right now. But certainly I think Corey's got he's trending. He really is. And we'll see as the season plays out. But, wouldn't be surprised to see maybe one of the younger guys get in there. I think once Gligic gets his feet under him, gets a feel for things, just, you know, having those discussions with him. I mean, he's having that, you know, he's playing, you know, in the next little while, he's playing some golf courses he hasn't seen before. But I think once he gets comfortable, I think, I think we'll see some good results.
They all have the game. Martin talked about this too. Many times he's been on the podcast, Martin Trainer. He's like, there's still that shock for everyone their first year out there. Doesn't matter how chill you are. And I know Gligic talked about that too, right? Like his first tournament at the Green Bar, you could see it in his eyes, just looking around like, I'm here. Like my dream, my dream came true. Right. And eventually you have to be like, this isn't a dream now. This is where
this is
I belong. This is my job. So could he win? I would love to see it. I believe he could. And he will win on the PGA Tour one day. But what else in the mailbag?
All right. Pebble Beach has raised their green fee to $575 US. Now that's just that green fee. In order to guarantee play, you've got to either book a night at the lodge. There could be a lot more expenses regarding that. This listener said, is any course worth that much to play? What's your opinion?
When I first saw this on Twitter, it kind of broke on Twitter, and they did a breakdown. It ends up being like $800 Canadian or something along those lines.
I did a story on it 3 years ago saying, you know, what could you get for the same amount?
Yeah.
But people are saying, okay, well, yes, but it's a different experience.
Exactly.
Right?
There's the thing about Pebble Beach. It's one of the best experiences in golf. You're not getting better views than that for 5 hours. People like
That's publicly accessible. Yeah, I mean, this is not Cypress Point where you cannot get on.
No, this is a public golf course, right?
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, it's 5 hours at Pebble Beach. It's like, I don't want to rush that.
No.
Like,
no, I'm not running around there.
No, exactly. Like, you know what? Put everything out. I don't care, you know, how long my round takes. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm standing where you name it.
Yeah.
Name any golfer out there that you can think of stood where I'm standing, right? Mm-hmm. And that probably lives the experience. Do I have, you know, could I see myself spending that right now?
That's a different question.
It's hard, right? If I'm standing there and I have my own golf clubs, it's hard not to say. I'm pulling out the MasterCard. I don't see how I'm not doing it. It's an experience. It's a one in a lifetime experience. I'm probably only doing it once. So is any golf course worth that much? Absolutely. Would I pay more for other golf courses? Yeah. Like you go to Augusta National and, you know, I might max out my credit card.
Well,
you know what I mean?
There's a good example. I mean, when you're talking about is a golf course worth it to play that much, you know, it's a value proposition for every individual, whether they, you know, if they dream about it that much and they want to make the investment in it. I mean, I've seen people spend, you know, there's people that spend $30,000 on a pair of Jordan shoes.
That's true.
So
I mean, they don't even wear them.
Right.
They just put them on the wall.
Exactly. So, you know, that's up to you. As far as the listener, that's up to you. But obviously there are certain one-time experiences and, you know, you can't discount the views, the experience, the history, everything that goes with that. Is that worth, you know, $1,000 to you in the end? That's your call. So we can't make that choice for you, but I can certainly say that, you know, if given that opportunity and you had those resources available, I think a lot of people might take it.
Yeah, I would love to see somebody be there that's a very avid golfer standing on the first tee with your own clubs and hey, you got to go pay. You got to go play. And they're holding the debit machine on the first tee. All you got to do is just put your pin in there.
Yeah.
My dad is frugal as frugal can be.
He'd still spend it.
He would put his debit cards in there and he's buying probably a round of drinks. Like, you know what I mean? Like you're there. You got to do it. Would I travel to Pebble Beach on purpose just to play it? Probably not. That's a different story, but you know, if I'm ever in the area, I'm probably playing.
Yeah. Well, relative to that, another listener asked, if you could play one hole in golf over and over again, which one would it be? And of course, they said it's got to be one that we've played. So this is obviously a personal opinion of a hole that's maybe special to you, something that you've seen. You know, that's could be a lot of golf holes.
Yeah, like this is one I haven't ever even thought about.
Neither have I, really. One hole.
Yeah, like one hole, it comes and goes really quickly. Why don't you go first? I'm just drawing a blank here completely.
For me, again, I think it comes down to a personal experience. I mean, I've been fortunate to play a lot of great golf holes and a great golf courses around the world. But I think really it comes back to to maybe a golf course that I used to play called Dixon Entrance in the west coast of BC. And the seventh hole in that golf course runs parallel to the Pacific Ocean. And, you know, it's just a beautiful spot to be out there. Alaskan Panhandle's 20 miles away. You're along that beachfront. You know, you're 8 hours off the coast of BC, technically, or whatever. So for me, that's just a personal connection to that facility that I worked for a couple of years when I was like 15 and 16 years old. You know, won a couple of club championships as a junior and things like that. So for me, that would be the hole. And it's just because it probably has those special memories for me more than anything.
Yeah, I'm like the first one that came to... I'm just trying, like, right now, the first ones that come to mind are just favorite holes around this area, I guess. But I guess if we're looking for a pretty factor and the whole nine yards of one that I would never get sick of looking, I mean, I haven't played top end, so maybe I think I might go the 18th hole at the Cuba Golf Course. I don't even know the name of it, but it runs right along the ocean there. Beautiful views, you know, clubhouse in the background where people are just drinking and they're hanging around the 18th green. And, you know, usually when you're playing in, you know, Cuba or Mexico, you're with some good friends. So yeah. If I guess that's it. But if I'm thinking in this, like, thinking in this area, there's tons of great golf holes that I just love every time I get there. And that's the weirdest part about golf, right? Is that, you know, that's my favorite hole.
Yeah.
And you only.
But it could be for some
three shots.
Yeah, but it could be for some reason that you don't even know.
It's true.
Right? It's just a case of for some reason you just like to play that golf hole. Yeah. I guess that's one of the special parts about having so many venues around the world to play.
That's true. So if I had to pick one, I guess that's the one, but hopefully get a better answer once I pay $100 to play.
There you go. All right. Last one in the mailbag today. And I saw one of these at the PGA show and, you know, there has been one that was out before. What are your thoughts on golf bags that have speakers embedded in them? And I don't know if this is really a separate question from, you know, music on the golf course. I think this is more of an opinion of someone that's looking to buy something like that.
I've changed my mind on music on the golf course. I was kind of anti it in the past. We pretty much had music on the golf course our entire rounds down in Arizona. And my thought process is if the other people can't hear it, then it's perfect. Mm. I was very hyper aware of when other groups were near us to, you know, that's their experience. Right. So I'm covering the speaker. I'm turning off the sound
for sure.
While I'm near those people. Speakers in a golf bag kind of says the opposite of that, where I don't know if I'm getting it quiet when people are around. Why do you need them in the golf bag? There's, you know, you can get a portable speaker in a beer case.
Yeah, well, see, that's what I was kind of wondering. I mean, obviously, a lot of people were going, you know, on about this. There's a few baseball players and stuff that are back in this one company that was at the show. I don't really think it's necessary, although it's a neat idea. The problem is that, you know, at some point, golf bags wear out.
That's so, true. There's that speaker.
Right. So, I mean, really, in the end, you know, just buy an external speaker. Obviously, you can buy a Bluetooth speaker fairly, you know, reasonable now. The convenience of maybe having it built into the bag, I guess, but in most cases, just bring it along. And I mean, what happens if the bag gets wet? Or, I mean, I haven't looked at those designs to see if that's, you know, something that's built in as far as waterproofing or whatever. But really, if I thought about it from a purchase standpoint, just to buy the bag that you're going to have and then buy the external speaker, because then from the other side of it, you can use the speaker anywhere you want. I mean, it's not like you're going to have a party at your house and then grab your golf bag and put it up in the kitchen so that you can play music for your friends.
Yeah, that's true.
Or maybe you will, but who knows?
Speaking of baseball players or baseball, is there a weirder sponsor on the PGA Tour than Adam Long with the MLB logo on his arm and his hat?
Well, Billy Andrade has that as a sponsor as well, but he's a huge baseball guy. I think the weirder one that I saw the other day was Underwriter Laboratories, UL. They're a sponsor on like the Golf Channel now. So, I mean, kudos to, you know, whoever sold them that, you know, ad, but I mean, there's always some weird ones that are out there, but yeah, you know, you're sitting there promoting one major league sport and you're promoting another.
It's like, you know, now I just really want to watch baseball. You know, like, you know, it just makes no sense, but that's just something that I saw at the Phoenix, the Waste Management Open that I thought about. But why don't we wrap it up? This is a good episode. We covered a lot. We got to cover one more thing. Season's coming, snow's melting. Let's get some tips going here, Scott.
All right, last tip of the week here, last segment of the week. Understanding ball position, really important. We have a lot of people that talk about that all the time. A lot of people look at that as a fundamental, but I wouldn't say it's always a fundamental. It can be a preference based on what you do in your swing, but I think what people have to know is that the golf swing is three-dimensional, and they have to figure out how the ball position affects other things that are happening in their golf swing. So it's not just about making contact on the face, which is what everybody sort of thinks, that they're going to hit it fat or thin just because of where it's positioned. That's really relative a lot to how the club is moving down, the angle of the face, the path of it as well. And there's a lot of things that are involved there that can create different shot shapes. So I think it's important for people to really understand how each of those things works. And it's not something I can tell you quickly in a tip. It's something you're going to have to work with your coach. But I'd say, you know, if somebody says to you, you know, move your ball position, understand all the different elements of it and what it can do and how it's going to affect your shot shapes, contact, path, face, all those different things, because it's super, super important.
Love it. All right. Well, we thank our guest, Kyle Peters, for coming on the podcast this week, giving us quick inside the ropes perspective of the Waste Management Open. We wish Scotty another happy 50th birthday.
Thank you.
We will be breaking down that senior U.S. Open qualifier at some point this summer. And, you know, if people start GoFundMe for to try to Monday qualify for a few events.
I don't think that's happening.
Hey, if anyone out there wants to start a GoFundMe, I will match up to $10.
Wow, generous.
Yeah, watch out. I got a lot of money. But other than that, we will see y'all next week. Oh, wait, you know what? We didn't even touch on it this week.
What's that?
The AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Do you want to talk about it?
No.
Neither do I. It's the worst tournament in golf. All right, we'll see you next week. Like today, my boat's lost in the ocean.